I'm Dr. Rod Berger. Sit back, grab a cup of coffee, and explore some of today's most pressing educational issues through the experienced eyes of leading education personalities. Welcome to Coffeed. Well, Bobby, this is such a treat to be able to speak with you, given your background and your legacy in education, entrepreneurism, and really your efforts to help everybody really in the ecosystem of innovation around education in getting ideas moved forward. And so there are so many questions I want to ask you, but let's first talk about the ecosystem of innovation, and that specifically of ed tech. We hear lots of white noise out there as to whether there's a bubble or if it's a great place to be able to participate in. Given your background and experience and those that you speak with, give us a little bit of the state of the union of this ecosystem of ed tech.
Well, I think you're seeing a lot of changes in it. I mean, the obvious one, if you look at it from the ecosystem group of people, is in the investor side. There's so many companies out there, and there's been so many investments, and basically startups can walk around the street in San Francisco or New York and raise $100,000 of angel funding. But what I'm seeing a big change in is that we're not seeing it so easy to raise the next round of money. The investors are lowering their valuations. They're looking at more, they're looking more carefully at what they invest in. So that's going to impact ed tech entrepreneurship. I think, on the other hand, if you look at the impact with the practitioners and the teachers of the schools, you're seeing a very large growth of more use of ed tech and looking for ways to get new ideas into the classroom and to the students faster. I think you're seeing this come up through, you know, this, everybody has a marketplace these days. So you have TSES Marketplace, you have Noodle. So the question is, what are those marketplaces are doing and how are they helping to get things into the classroom faster and more approved? Right now, I think they're at the tip of the iceberg for that opportunity. And then if you look at the entrepreneurs themselves, you are seeing them be more selective about who's on their founding team. They're realizing that you can't just have a great business person or a great tech person or a great teacher. You need a combination of all three of those. And then finally, if you look at the researchers, you're seeing that researchers are becoming very, very, very attuned to looking carefully at how research goes into practice. So we're seeing more action research in universities. We're seeing more iterative researching. We're seeing more design-based researching. And we're seeing a lot of growth of the lean startup model being applied to education research at universities. I think this will get new ideas and good research into the classrooms faster.
I'm glad you brought up higher education. So, you know, the cynic out there says that higher education, especially in training of teachers and really in supporting the profession of education and teaching, has been late to the party in so many instances. But I'm hearing from you that actually there's a lot of innovation at the higher ed side of it in the discussion in assisting in K-12. Am I hearing you correctly?
Well, a lot at university speed is not the same thing as a lot of entrepreneur speed. But yes, the universities are very sensitive to the fact of the changes that are going on. And they're trying to make sure that their research has an impact faster, because you can't spend 3 years doing a study about a digital product because, one, the platform may not be there, the product's gone away, or there's a new version of it. So universities are sensitive. They're even more sensitive to the teacher training issue. How do we train teachers, and how do we make sure that we're getting teachers that can have an impact, and how do we get people to come into the teaching profession that will stay in the profession?
Are you seeing that they're really looking at being thoughtful in the way that they teach or train the new crop of teachers with regards to technology? Because that's one of the things that we hear from those that are entering into teaching following their own education, is that they're entering into these ecosystems that are very different from the universities that were supposed to teach them and be to get them prepared for the environment, especially in the ed tech world.
Yeah, I don't think we're quite there yet. I agree with the teachers coming into the classroom. I don't think universities do a very good job yet of looking at ed tech. They don't have enough time because the current way we train teachers demands a lot of time in the classroom, as it should. And it demands, and they also spend a lot of time sort of on the foundations of education. So how do we blend those two together? At the University of Pennsylvania, we are doing a lot of work around looking at how do we train teacher education to be more hands-on. We have a very exciting project going on with the Lucas Foundation to look at project-based learning and what are the best core practices and how do we incorporate that into teaching. And I believe the teacher education programs need to change And unfortunately, they need a crystal ball because they need to be training teachers to teach in the new models of schools, including ed tech, rather than to teach teachers to teach in the classic model of teacher education. The problem is we don't know what these new schools are going to look like, but we need to be thinking about what the teachers are going to do in those new schools. So, you know, we have Lorraine Jobs' new project that she's going to give $50 million away to redesign of high schools to 5 to 6 schools. Well, what teachers are going to teach in those schools? They haven't thought about that. I mean, and you can't change a teaching force overnight to go into a new redesign. So we have to collaborate with these new redesigns with schools of education so that we're training teachers to go into these new models. And we're not at the moment.
And sadly, it seems like everybody is playing catch up depending upon where they are in this ecosystem. You know, recently, Bobby, I had a conversation with a young female entrepreneur in India. And she had a lot of questions for me. She's very bright, and I think she's on to something with what she's been developing with her very small, lean team. But I thought that it spoke to a lot of the questions that entrepreneurs have, and I'd love to get your take on some of these questions. So number one for her was how to know when she should approach investors. And, you know, she's getting lots of different pieces of advice from people who say, wait till you're big enough so that you actually maintain some value in the equity that you're giving away, and others are saying, no, you need that investment now. How do you advise early startups when it comes to that investment question of when and then how to proceed?
I think it's a question that's very difficult to answer, and because it's a moving target, and investors are very fickle about what the hot item is of the day. So, and I think you have to learn to read investors. You should be talking to investors for relationship building from the day you start your company. So you need to be part of this ecosystem. You need to meet investors. You need to hear their advice. You need to hear what they're interested in, not necessarily to even ask them for money. So you need to be building relationships for a long time. And most of the investments I do, I know the entrepreneurs for a long, long time before I actually make the investment. I often know them from when they started the company, like CodeMonkey, for example, that you mentioned earlier, we talked about earlier. So I think that we should start early building the relationship, go to events where investors are going to be at. But when do you actually approach them to ask for money? It depends on when you need money. And it's different stages of money. If you need money for innovation, then you need to know what investors will invest in that area. If you need money for growth, that's a different kind of investor. So depending on the type of investment you need, depends on when you ask. I think you also have to be prepared to know when an investor says to you, good idea, but come back to me when you have more, or, you know, we don't do this, and don't spend your time going back and back and forth to an investor. Basically, they're telling you we're not going to make that investment, so you should move on.
So know when, right? How to read the tea leaves. You know, the other question she had, Bobby, was with regards to competition, the competitors out there. I find that even when I'm speaking with people, that it becomes a very difficult question for them to answer when you're just simply saying, okay, well, tell me about the competitors in the landscape that you feel are near to what you're trying to provide in the market. It seems that they are either head down in what they're trying to develop, and so they're missing all the action around them, or they're maybe a little bit scared and or naive as to what's out there, and they don't want to sort of crush that enthusiasm that they need every day to get out of bed and to work in a world where there's no guarantee that they're going to make it, but they've got a dream, they've got an idea that they want to make a difference. So how do you address that in a realistic way so that they are aware of what's going on, but that it doesn't stunt their creativity and their innovation and really their excitement in a very tough world?
It is, and you want good entrepreneurs to run with blinders. They have to believe that what they're doing is the best thing that has ever happened for education or for whatever they're developing. But the truth of the matter is, three reasons why entrepreneurs fail is, one, they don't know the academic research behind their product. So they go out to build something that they think is wonderful. They build it in blue and all the research says it's red, not suggesting that blue might not work, but you better understand why red's working and why you think blue's better rather than just assuming it is. Second is they don't know the actual competition. So I get young entrepreneur comes in my office and describes this great idea and it's wonderful in their mind. And I say, well, do you know about so-and-so? And they have no idea. And that's not something difficult to do. They need to be on the internet. They need to make their own connections. They need to be looking at internet. They need to be going to meetings and they need to see who's winning these competitions. They need to see who's at the meetups. And they need to build a very, very secure understanding of who the competition is. And by the way, competition is good, not bad. but they need to know where they're unique, and most of them don't do that.
And what was the third then, or was that sort of the blend?
The third is that they don't realize that it's going to take a lot of time and a lot of, not money in the large amount of dollars, but it's going to take money to do what they want. And they don't allocate their resources very well across time and money. So they tend to think that, well, I have to spend a lot of money to build X before they even have done the market research. So they're often out of sync about the timeline to build a new company and the cost to do it.
Let's talk a little bit. I know you've done some work and have been a part of boards in this space. That always is a sort of a mysterious group to the entrepreneur, are these advisory boards associated with bigger brands or known entities. Take us behind the scenes as to how boards work and the value, because I also have folks who say, you know, I'd like to participate in that world because I think it might help me build my network, a little bit of understanding and my own expertise and acumen in the space. Tell us a little bit about that from an experience standpoint and the value that you get in participating in boards at that level.
There are a lot of advisory boards, and everybody thinks, so if you put so-and-so's name on it, it's going to bring them investors or it's going to bring them, you know, customers. I personally have a rule that I will not go on an advisory board unless they are an active board. And I define active by having an interaction with the CEO on a regular basis. It might be once a month for half an hour, it may be once a quarter for an hour, and that the advisory board does have tasks to do. It's not just come and listen to me tell you what the update is, but what is it you want me to do? And in exchange for that, there has to be some reward or some payment for it. The payment in most cases is some equity. Now, most of the time that doesn't become of any value, but that makes the entrepreneur realize that you have value. So I think that they're giving up something to use you. And when they do that, they're more likely to use your connections more than just putting your name on a website. I could be on hundreds and hundreds of names on websites and I don't do it.
Yeah.
I think advisory boards are, unless they're an active advisory board, they often become a problem for you, because if you're not updated on what the company's doing and something happens to that company and your name's on the website, that's going to come back and haunt you.
Yeah. You know, Bobby, let's circle back as we close our conversation here and talk about, you mentioned offhandedly about the marketplaces out there in ed tech that are, you know, we've got the Noodle Marketplace, you've got TES, TES, these different groups and these sorts of things. And it makes me think about fatigue in the ed tech market. I mean, I've always wondered, when are we going to sort of reach that point where teachers or building administrators or just consumers of ed tech are going to finally say, okay, we can only evaluate so much. We're sort of at this... We're at maybe at the end of the road and we need to take a break or pause in what we're doing here and really see if we're making a difference. Where are we with regards to fatigue in the market, and how do we provide enough sort of support there so that we don't experience fatigue, that we can actually engage with technology that is going to be helpful and separate from some of the white noise in a market that, if you're not intimately involved like you are, it can be very, very daunting to be looking at different solutions that you might want for your district or your classroom.
Well, I think that's one of the big conundrums in this whole space of ed tech. How do we, as a teacher or as an administrator or as a parent, know what's out there? And so it tends to be who my best friend used X, or the teacher in the room next to me uses it. So we need more knowledge about it. We need more resources to go out and compare them. So the marketplaces, to me, are, if they're going to do their job correctly and effectively, needs to be more of a place, more of a consumer guide than just a place and go and buy things, because we don't have a central place to get information. So we're doing a good job with things like EdSurge, or if you read the stuff from MDR, or you read some of the other newsletters that come out from TechCrunch, you can keep up on the new companies. But you get a one sentence blurb, and you need to find a place that's going to give you more information about it.
A deeper dive.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, this has been such a pleasure. I hope we get another chance to follow up on some of these conversations, because we could have spent all day talking about the different questions that these entrepreneurs have. But I think that it's such a valuable contribution to the field to be able to share your expertise and a real conversation for folks, because there's a lot on the line for a lot of these entrepreneurs, and they've got families involved and friends and great ideas that we don't want to stifle. We want to support in a fantastic and realistic way. So thanks again, Bobby.
Thank you for your time, and I look forward to a follow-up.
Join us for our next cup of coffee as we continue to have conversations in education that matter to you. I'm Dr. Rod Berger, and this is Coffee.